starting this over, but I'm not going to read the first verse again. So verse number one there talks about the Moses setting up the tabernacle. And the first blank that you have in your book there is that he set up the tabernacle. All right, the tabernacle. And anointed it and sanctified it. So there's a lot of ceremonial things that went involved in this when they set up the tabernacle. Remember, just picture in your mind this big old tabernacle. It was the tabernacle proper, the inside part wasn't that huge, but it was, the outer court was big. It was a big outer court, and then the tabernacle was in the inner court of the, you know, in the inside of all that. And remember, the tabernacle was divided into two sections. One section was the Holy of Holies, and the other section was the holy place. And the priests were the ones that went into the holy place. Nobody went into the Holy of Holies except the high priest on the Day of Atonement once a year. All right? And so he set up this whole tabernacle. They had already designed it. And then, as you read these books, remember, it was described by God in Exodus 25 and gathered and collected and built throughout the rest of the book of Exodus. And then we have the book of Leviticus that was all the ceremonial instructions and rules and laws regarding all their ceremonial things. So really, there hasn't been much time from the time that they finished the tabernacle in Exodus until now here in Numbers. So the connections there, we need to put them together. So this really butts up against the last chapters of Exodus. And so they've made all these, they've set it up, they sanctified it, which means to make it holy through ceremonies and things that they did. And all the instruments, you know, what were the instruments of the tabernacle? What were some of the instruments?
Harp, wasn't it?
No.
Oh, you mean like instruments, like they...
They weren't musical instruments.
Oh, the bowl for catching the blood.
Okay, well, I don't know if they had one for catching the blood, but...
Wasn't there a
showbread?
There was a table of showbread, all right? And then there was the lampstand, and there was the altar of incense, and there was the laver where they washed in, and then there was the big altar for the sacrifices, and then inside of the Holy of Holies was the Ark of the Covenant. Okay, so he sanctified all the instruments, and that's what he's talking about. But the instruments here is not
in the ark at this particular time.
I don't think there was anything in it at this time. Not yet, I don't think.
Were the Ten Commandments, the two Ten Commandments in there?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that would have been given in Exodus 20. Yeah, you're right. So they would have probably been in there.
No manna yet.
They haven't hit the manna yet.
Oh, that's true.
So Moses
I don't know. There's a hard one because there was all these different things that took place. There was, at one point they put manna in it, another time. I don't know whether they actually stored the Ten Commandments in that thing all the time from day one.
I think they did.
But then they could never read them because they could never get to them.
Yeah, but it was like two stones.
Right.
Upon.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to do some research on that.
That was only the tablets, not the scrolls. And stuff.
Well, I know that, but what I'm saying is if they're in there and they can't go in there to get that and they can only go in there once a year, then they couldn't have any access to it for the whole time. But they could be... They didn't have a Bible. Anyway, that's another whole story. Quiet, Joe. Okay. All right, now, back to what we're looking at here. In verse number 2, it says, "And the princes of Israel, the heads of the house of their fathers, who were the princes of the tribes, and were over them that were numbered, offered." All right, so here they start making some offerings. Now, there's two specific offerings that they're going to see. We'll see here that in the third paragraph down here, it's the first offering, and then a couple more paragraphs down, it's the second offering. So this is the first offering, and notice what they offer here. All right, so they says here that in verse number 3, "And they brought their offerings before the Lord, 6 covered wagons, 12 oxen, a wagon, for two of the princes, and for a wagon for two of the princes, and for each one an ox, and they brought them before the tabernacle. Why now? So they bring in these six covered wagons. Now these wagons, the word wagon there refers to a cart that was pulled by the oxen of some sort. It doesn't really describe the cart, whether it was two wheels or four wheels, probably two wheels. But it doesn't really matter, but it was some sort of a wagon. Now that was, you know, stop and think about this. These were slaves. These were people that had zero. They had nothing. So obviously they must have confiscated this from Egypt when they left. These wagons, otherwise they might have been able to make some kind of bargains with people that were in the neighborhood that they could have buy them from.
I think this is with the history of Egypt. So even though people were slaves, ownership of property for slaves wasn't forbidden. The Egyptians, you remember they were complaining about the good life they had in Egypt when they were having a hard time. So they were still owned, and they didn't have freedoms and treated harshly, but they still had the right to own.
But at the same time, wagons were not something that was real common.
No, sure.
It was something very, very valuable. Yeah. Remember when Joseph sent the wagons up to his father? And that was an amazing thing. As soon as his father saw those, he says, whoa, I guess maybe it was Joseph that sent this, because it was something unusual. So this was a significant thing. So there's six wagons, that goes in your little blank there, that they gave them. And then as we move on, we see who received them. This is an important one, and I want you to keep getting this over and over in your mind until you can get it stuck in there. And they brought, let me see, where was I? Verse number 4, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take it of them, that they may be to do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, and thou shalt give them unto the Levites, to every man according to his service. All right, so these wagons were supposed to be for the Levites. And Moses took the wagons and the oxen and gave them unto the Levites. Two wagons and four oxen he gave to the sons of Gershom, according to their service. All right, now, let's stop and think about that. What were the Gershonites carrying? Anybody remember?
Tabernacle stuff.
Well, yeah, but what?
The materials?
Yes, the materials.
The tents themselves.
All right, the Gershonites had the tents and the materials, all the cloth, woven-type materials. So they had all that. And it was a lot of it because of all the way around the tabernacle was all this stuff. So there's a lot of this stuff. So they got some of the wagons so they could put all that stuff in the wagons. That was a help to them. All right, and then we read on. And we see that verse number 8. And four wagons and eight oxen he gave unto the sons of Merari according to their service under the hand of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the priest. All right, so Merari, what did they carry?
The wagon stuff?
No, the wagons were to put stuff in. So what did the Merari family do? They carried the boards and the bars. All right, so they had the heavy stuff. That's why they got the four wagons. The other guys had two wagons for the cloth stuff. Now the wooden stuff, they got the boards and the bars. And so they got four wagons for theirs. Now, why did not the Kohathites get any? They didn't get anything. Yes?
They were not allowed to carry the ark on the wagon?
Right. How were they supposed to carry it?
Sticks. Poles.
On their poles on the shoulders. Right? So all the inner furniture of the tabernacle, so that would be the Ark of the Covenant and the table of showbread and the candlestick, and the laver, all of those things, and I think maybe the brazen altar as well, were all had rings on the sides. They put poles in them, and they carried them on their shoulders. So this was the job of the Kohathites. And so they couldn't have wagons. They had to carry it all by themselves. All right, so this is the first offering, these wagons. But then the second offering, we see in verse, starting in verse number 9, well, actually, in verse number 9, it talks about the Kohathites. But the sons of the Kohathites gave you none, because they were, the service of the sanctuary belonged to them was to, that they should bear upon their shoulders. Okay? So that was the Kohathites. So it's good to remember these three sons of Aaron, the Gershom, Merari, and Kohathites. All right, so the Kohath. So these are the three sons and what they carried there. Then the second offering in verse number 10, and the princes offered for dedicating of the altar in the day that it was anointed, even the princes offered their offerings before the altar. And the Lord said unto Moses, they shall offer their offerings, each prince, on his day for the dedicating of the altar. All right, so now they're going to start out on day number one. And I'm not going to read all this, because you'll see that from beginning of verse number 12 is this, the tribe of Judah. And they gave their things, and then each tribe gave the exact same thing on their day. So there's 12 days here. So these are the 12 days of the offering. All right, so you starts out with verse 12, verse 18, verse 24, verse 30, verse 36, verse 42, verse 48, and verse 54, and verse 60, and verse 66, and verse 72, and verse 78. All right, so those are the 12 days of their sacrifices.
They couldn't have done it on the one day. It would have been too many animals to sacrifice.
Well, see, they did this. Yeah, that was part of it. But each one, they wanted it to be divided up into these 12 days. All right, so as we look at this, back in our notes here, I want to read verses. Well, actually, I'll read verse 84, beginning with verse number 84. This gives us the summary, and it tells the exact same thing of all these other ones. All right, verse 84, this is the dedication of the altar in the day when it was anointed by the princes of Israel. 12 chargers of silver, 12 silver bowls, 12 spoons of gold. Each charger of silver weighed 130 shekels, each bowl 70. All the silver vessels weighed 2,400 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary. The golden spoons were 12, full of incense, weighing 10 shekels apiece after the shekel of the sanctuary. All the gold of the spoons was 120 shekels. All the oxen for the burnt offering were 12 bullocks, and rams 12, and of the lambs of the first year 12, with their meat offerings. Now remember the meat offering. What was the meat offering?
Yes. Yeah, it was like just food. I mean, like, wasn't the word meat?
It wasn't just food. What was it? It was meal.
Meal.
All right, so it was grain of some sort, all right? Wheat or barley.
Like meat,
yes. It wasn't steak, all right, that kind of meat, all right. So their meat offerings, and the kid of the goats for a sin offering, and all the oxen for the sacrifice of the peace offering, verse number 88, was 20 and 4 bullocks, and the rams 60, and the goats 60, and the lambs of the first year 60. This was the dedication of the altar after it was anointed. All right, so as you go through this, each one, you read it, and you just get done reading it, and it turns right around and says the exact same thing. It could go ditto, 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 but it had a different name under each one of them. So that's why it's, in a sense, you look at it and think, that's a little bit on the redundant side, and sometimes it seems almost boring. Why would God do that? Why would God describe that in exact detail, every one of them, again and again and again like that?
I was going to say, with the meat offering, though, that one wasn't a sin offering, was it? Because it can't, because you need blood for remission of sin.
Yeah, that was a different offering.
Yeah, it's just like...
All right, so back to my question.
Because they were under the law.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Everything was law.
Yes, but why would God want them to describe the same thing 12 times identically? John Ray?
This is... Might be a bit abstract, but the number 12 is all in the Bible. It comes up over and over and over.
Well, I don't think that's the reason.
Might remember it.
Yeah, well, that would help remember it.
For each tribe?
Sean?
I just did guess that perhaps they actually read through all of this as they performed the offerings, isn't it?
Read through what?
like read through the list of the things that they had to do and, you know, counted out the 12 spoons and the 12 bowls and all that.
Well, they may have, but that wouldn't... My thinking is that it's probably because God cares about the details. God is a God of details. And as we look at this, each one of them, didn't matter which tribe it was, God was concerned and cared about exactly what each of those tribes gave. And as we look at this, as we apply it to our own selves, you know, we can see how that as we give to the Lord, God cares about what we give. You know, if, when you give a tithe or an offering to the Lord, He takes note of exactly what you gave, and He knows whether you gave it sparingly or bountifully. All right, remember there in 2 Corinthians 9, He talks about giving sparingly or bountifully, and whether or not you gave it grudgingly or of necessity or cheerfully, and 2 Corinthians 9:7. And He takes consideration in the percentage of what we gave compared to what we kept. All right, now let's just take a look at that. That's just some good application for us. Luke chapter 21. I want to read these verses here as Jesus was making an important application for them. Luke chapter 21, beginning with verse number 2. And He saw a certain poor widow casting in thither two mites. And He said, "Of a truth, I say unto you, that this poor widow hath cast in more than they all, for all they have of their abundance cast unto the offering of God, but she of her penury or poverty hath cast in all the living that she had." All right, so the Lord made a notice here. He said that that woman, in God's sight, gave more than all of these other guys that were dumping in bags full. And the reason is because...
Anyone want a clean tissue?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
I do.
Oh, thanks, man.
Okay. Emergency session here. Okay. So the God said that the amount that we give was not as significant as the percentage of what we gave. The idea here is He saw that this woman who had almost nothing gave all that she had. And God said that was a lot because it came from her heart, and she gave from her heart a lot in her mind. But in reality, she didn't give very much. But He's not saying that you give your two little mites and that's good enough. He's simply saying he takes notice of how much we gave or the percentage of what we gave. And those verses there in Corinthians that deal with the bountifully and sparingly, I think we're familiar with those. But good things for us to ponder there. All right, so these are this first chapter 7 was all about the offerings of the people during this time. Now they were dedicating. Remember, it was a dedication offering that they were making for they had just set up the tabernacle and they're dedicating all these things. Now in chapter 8, all right, He starts off with the lighting of the lamps. All right, now remember the lamp. How many actual flames were on the lampstand?
Seven.
Okay, so seven flames on it, seven little lamps. Yeah. So the lamps were there, and they're lighting the lamp that was in the tabernacle. All right, so. Verse number 1 says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto Aaron, and say unto him, When thou lightest the lamps, the seven lamps shall give light over against the candlestick. And Aaron did so. He lighted the lamps thereof over against the candlestick, as the Lord commanded Moses. And the work of the candlestick was of beaten gold unto the shaft thereof, unto the flowers thereof, was beaten work according unto the pattern which the Lord had showed Moses, so that He made the candlestick." So this is this candlestick they had. So it sounds like this may have been the very first time they lit it. I mean, it kind of implies that. But if it was, it was kind of overlapping some of the stuff we saw back in the book of Exodus. So as we look at this, I want to read a couple of things here. By J. Vernon McGee, and another one by Albert Barnes, and another by Thomas Constable here in your notes here. First one by McGee, chapter 8 continues the section regarding the cleansing operation in preparation for the wilderness march. Those who were going to follow God and serve him had to be clean. All right, so this is a cleansing time. All right, and then Barnes goes on, and he says the actual lighting of the lamps was to be done to set forth symbolically the special presence of which God had now actually established among his people. All right, and he mentions that in 7:89. And then to this Constable adds, he says the lighting of the lamps in the tabernacle symbolized the consecration of the Levites who were to represent the whole nation as lights to the world. So two different kind of outlooks on that. One, Barnes said he thought it has to do with symbolically of indicating the presence of the Lord with this light of this lamp. And then the constable, he seems to think that it has just a representing of the light of, that the Levites were to the world. So either way, it was a light that was lighted there in the tabernacle for not for them to just be able to see, but there was significance about the light itself. All right, and God had them have this in the tabernacle. Now you can imagine in that tabernacle they would have needed the lights. It wasn't like they didn't need that light because it was dark in there. It was all covered with all these layers and layers of skins and cloth and things. So it would have been dark in the tabernacle itself. So the candlestick would have lit that. So it was important, but the overall significance wasn't just to have light. All right, then verses, beginning verse number 16, we see here that there was the cleansing of the Levites. So everybody, there's this, all these ceremonies that they were going through to get everybody ready for this tabernacle. Verse 16, and they were wholly given unto me according to the children of Israel instead of such as open every womb, even instead of the firstborn of all the children of Israel, I have taken them unto me. So he's talking about the Levites. God said, I'm taking the Levites. Instead of the firstborn, they're mine. They're going to be mine specifically. If I'm going to use them in my work, and they're going to serve me. And so when we think about the Levites, so let's just review again, who were the Levites? I mean, what did that refer to?
The descendants of Aaron?
No.
They were the ones that did all the temple work.
Yes, but no, beyond that, who were these Levites?
Children of Israel.
Yes, okay, they were the children of Levi. All right, Jacob had 12 sons. Levi was one of them. All right, so this is one of the tribes of Israel. All right, so then there was the tribe that God said, I'm going to choose that tribe. They're going to be mine. I'm going to take them instead of the firstborn so that they didn't have to sacrifice the firstborn of among the people. He says, the Levites will be mine.
So all the unto the Lord.
Yes. So these other answers you gave were true, but that's not what I was after. I was after where did they originate? All right, so they were one of the tribes of Israel. All right, so they were a tribe that God had chosen and set apart for his service. And Moses and Aaron and the priests were among the Levites. Okay, so they were part of the Levites. They were the part of the Levitical tribe. Okay, and their cleansing followed a specific ritual, chapter 8 and verse number 7. Thou shalt do unto them to cleanse them, sprinkle the water of purifying upon them, and let them shave off all their flesh, and let them wash their clothes, and so make themselves clean. So they were to wash, shave, and cleanse themselves and wash their clothes, And so that was a very big deal. You know, and especially when you think about the situation here, we're out in the middle of the wilderness. It would have been not easy to be able to find, you know, running water, adequate things of that nature. Now, there were times when God followed them with this running water, but at the same time, not always was that the case. So in this situation, it would have been a big thing here. Verse number 8, and they then let them take a young bullock, or a bull or a cow, with his meat offering or the grain offering, even fine flour mingled with oil. All right, so this meal offering was the fine flour, and they were to mingle it or mix it with oil. And another young bullock shalt thou take for a sin offering. All right, so they needed to make two offerings here, one with the meal offering and the other one with the sin offering. And thou shalt bring the Levite before the tabernacle of the congregation, and thou shalt gather the whole assembly of the children of Israel together. And thou shalt bring the Levite because the Lord before the Lord, and the children of Israel shall put their hands upon the Levites. I know when it talks about the children of Israel putting their hands upon them, very likely it was heads of the children of Israel. It wasn't like, you know, 3 million people came along and put their hands on them. Yeah, it wouldn't work very well. So they were very likely some of the heads of the chief men of the tribes would do this. And then Aaron offered the Levites as an offering to the Lord. All right, so that goes in your blank there. He offers the Levites as an offering to the Lord. Verse number 11, Aaron shall offer the Levites before the Lord for an offering of the children of Israel, that they may execute the service of the Lord. All right, so he offered them to the Lord. And the Levites then, notice that they, the Levites, shall lay their hands upon the heads of the bullock, and they shall offer one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering unto the Lord to make atonement for the Levites. All right, so then they came, and these cows or these bulls that they had, they put their hands on them symbolically to represent placing their sins upon them. There's a lot of symbolizing in all of this. But it shows us that it was significant to God that he wanted them clean. He wanted them to be doing what was right if they were going to be in this service of the tabernacle.
It's interesting that during this whole 400 years in Egypt, they took such meticulous care to keep track of who was in which tribe. It's like, cause they knew. Oh, obviously, from the context, you can tell that they knew exactly who the Levites were and who the...
Yes, but I mean, we do the same today. I mean, you look back, you know, well, 400 years was a long time, I admit that. But, you know, you follow your ancestry back and, you know, you know where you've come from most of the time.
Sacrifice, well, it was all pointing to Christ, really, at the end of the day. The bulls couldn't take away the sins.
No.
The doves and all the bloodshedding couldn't take away the sins. They were only for a certain time.
Yeah.
And until Christ. So it was all pointing to Christ. It was very...
So all of these sacrifices, as Job mentions here in the Old Testament, were temporary sacrifices, looking forward to the day when Christ would be the ultimate sacrifice. All right? And then we see down in verse number 21 that the Levites were purified and washed their clothes, and Aaron offered them as an offering before the Lord, and Aaron made an atonement for them to cleanse them. And after that, went the Levites in to do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation before Aaron and before his sons, and as the Lord had commanded Moses concerning the Levites, so did they unto them. So all of this is in preparation for them actually doing their work. Now, this is significant to see what God was putting them through in this situation. And then he goes on and he clarifies it a little bit even more. Verse 23, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, this is it that belongeth unto the Levites. From 25 years old and upward, they shall go in to wait upon the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. And from the age of 50 years, they shall cease waiting upon the service thereof, and they shall serve no more. All right, so from 25 to 50 was the ages of those that were to be working in the tabernacle. Okay, so all of these Levites from all these three tribes, the Gershonites, three families of the tribes of Levi, the Gershom, the Kohath, and the Merari, they were all doing their service from 25 years old to 50 years old. All right.
Seems like that was the age where I considered them to be at their prime in life to function.
Yes. All right. So we see this here once they got past 50 years old, then they basically were retired. So all of us that are over that, we even feel old.
Hard to be 50 again.
Yeah.
Well, just put it this way. If you've been walking in the desert for 40 years, at 50 years old, you're not going to look as good as a 50-year-old now.
No.
You're going to have some desert miles.
Yeah. All right, some principles for us today. Because God is holy and pure, He wants those serving Him to be set apart from sin as well. It is true that God has a higher standard for pastors and church leaders than for other Christians. Yet, He calls every true believer a saint or a holy one, and He calls each one to separate from evil. And that's an important truth for us to focus our thoughts on. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17 says, "Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." Now, that was written to Christians in general. All right, in 2 Timothy 2:22, "Flee also youthful lust, but follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart." Once again, written to Timothy and charging him regarding people of the congregation as well. And then there's other references there you can dig into. But the idea here, you know, when we read sections like this and you think, wow, why did God go to all of that? It was all these offerings and purifyings and sacrifices and all this was to make sure that they were clean and pure before the Lord. And that's a good reminder for us that God wants us to guard ourselves and keep ourselves pure. And there's so much in our world today that will rob us of our purity. You know, we think of purity and we think, you know, of immorality. And that's certainly a part of it. But there's a lot of other stuff in our world that pollutes us as well. A lot of other sinful things. And so these people were set apart. They were dedicated to the Lord. And God went through all these rituals to show that they were clean and they were to keep themselves clean because of their position and their work that they had to do. And in order for them to do their work, before they could do that work, they had to be clean. And so another good reminder for us is as we're serving the Lord that God wants us to guard ourselves and keep ourselves from ungodliness in this world, whether it be moral things or whether it be other issues in the world that will corrupt us and pollute us. Okay? Any thoughts or comments? Jenner?
I was just going to say, with this sort of law structure was in place up until, like, the book of... No, so I guess Matthew is still in the Old Testament, technically, isn't it? So, I mean, this is what they were doing, like, this sort of...
Christ was alive,
yeah,
they were still under the law.
Yeah, but what I mean, like, more like practical sense, when this sort of priestly setup, you know, was something they were continually doing up until...
Well, they were supposed to put it that way. They didn't always. I mean, because during the times of the judges, they'd fallen away from God and they'd come back.
But by the time you see Jesus, you see the kind of the religious organization around them. They're very corrupt by that point.
Yeah. But they don't accept Christ, so
You've got to remember the three. Yeah. The church, the Jews, and the Gentile. In the millennial kingdom, there'll be sacrifices once again. Believe it or not.
Yeah, well, they will be sacrifices probably of a symbolical...
Maybe. They do say sacrifice.
Yes, but you're right. They do say sacrifice, but, I mean, Christ paid the ultimate sacrifice, so they couldn't
but
be of the same...
That's very specific there, and people can argue that point. But there will be no sacrifice. And Israel still has to be converted, and they will be converted during the tribulation, and that the promises of God will still be with them. So there's still that distinction. And that's what the thousand-year millennial kingdom is for.
So,
promises of God to the Jews.
Okay, anything else about this chapter?
I was just wondering, if you go to chapter 7, verse 89, the last verse there, when Moses was talking to going into the tabernacle.
Yes.
Why? I just wonder why they say talking to it, but he talking to, he said him, but he's talking to like a small letter, you know, like an, is it just a way they describe it, or?
All right. Well, first of all, the you cannot determine anything by the capitalization, even in our Bible. The translators capitalized things that they thought was supposed to be capitalized, but there's no capitalization in the original languages that can distinguish
it. It's a European thing. The concept of capitalization.
So, all I'm just saying to answer your question, if it's speaking of God here, just because it isn't capitalized doesn't necessarily mean that. All right. So he says that when Moses was gone into the tabernacle of the congregation to speak with him, then he heard the voice of one speaking unto him from off this mercy seat, and that was upon the Ark of the Testimony, for between the two cherubims, from between the two cherubims, and he spake unto him. All right, so what was your question about that? Was he speaking to God? Is that your question?
Yeah, was it God speaking to him?
Well, it certainly sounds like it. I mean, it does not specifically say.
Yeah.
The Lord had showed Moses, so he had made the candlesticks.
Yeah.
Lord. Capital. Which Lord are you talking about?
All right. We're in verse 89.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same old thing. When it's the capital letter, it means the Lord. The Lord spoke unto Moses, capital letter.
Yes, but he was talking about verse 89. Okay, Sean?
It's two quick comments. One, like it talks about burning oil for the lamps and that type of thing. I think it's easy for us, we're going to shovel some oil. But they would have had to probably press like olives and whatever to get the oil. And it's like, it's a detailed and complex process. There's a lot of work involved in actually just making the oil
to burn the lamp.
So it's just, they've got some oil.
Yes, especially when there's no olive trees in the wilderness.
Yeah, I don't know how and where they sourced it there, and how they did it when the robe and all this stuff wouldn't have a crest and all that type of thing. So,
No, probably not. It was usually, most of it was always olive oil that they burned. But when we think about this, the oil that was being burned, they could have. You know, it doesn't say where they got these kind of things, but there were other nations around. They could have sent off, a dozen guys off to the neighboring area and bargained with them and bought supplies of things that they couldn't do. I don't know. But that is a good question. Where did they get that?
Because they probably would have gotten a lot of supplies and resources from Jethro, wouldn't they, at some point, when they were first with him?
Well, possibly.
He gave Moses a lot of advice.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But, I mean, when you think of 40 years wandering through the wilderness, 40 years is a long time to be carrying around a lot of oil for these lamps. So there had to have been some sort of a source that they got them from.
I think they had a lot of skills, too, to make a lot of stuff themselves.
My other comment was just to talk about the preparation of the priests and that, and Joe alluded to it before, but I was thinking, why isn't the scapegoat mentioned in this preparation here? This is just the general preparation. It's not the preparation for the Day of the Atonement. That's sort of once a year that you talked about at the start, and that so they're even more involved in God making the priests and everything holy, and that even better pictures Christ and points to Christ, and Hebrews 10 explains all that very well. So it's just teaching something. Why is it scapegoat in this passage? But it's because it's just the general day to day.
Garrett?
I still have a question, actually. In Revelation 11:19, he mentions, it was just a generic question, but he's saying, and the temple of God was opened in heaven. I'm not sure what temple it could be symbolic. But then after that he says, and there was seen in his temple the Ark of his Testament. Some people think, is that the Ark of the Covenant? Is that symbolic of something else? Because it couldn't be the temple.
Isn't the temple on earth the replica of the temple in heaven? Isn't that what it's supposed to be, or is?
Yeah, well, this temple that is mentioned there, he says it's the temple of heaven. So that would have been something specifically in heaven he's referring to. And everything that God designed on earth was pictures of what was in heaven. So it gives us a little bit of an idea of that. Okay, Peter.
Chapter 7, who were the princes?
Who were the princes? They were leaders of the nations. They weren't like king princes. They were the heads of the tribes.
So kind of like what we would think of in more recent times as lords.
Well,
like
not necessarily.
Men who are like they were, overseers of the tribe.
It refers to the chief. They were leaders. And, you know, even like we're going to see later on, I was doing some study ahead today in chapter 16, 15 or 16, when they were choosing the men to go out to spy out the land, and they chose the chief of the men, the princes. So it was speaking of the leaders, the leadership of the tribes.
Okay.